Hannibal Hamlin, who I think was from Missouri, if I remember correctly. And then his second term, which he didn't get, obviously didn't get to complete because of the assassination, yeah. was Andrew Johnson. And that's a whole other story. We do have an Andrew Johnson, by the way, in our stable of U.S. presidents. Former Judge Jim Slagle does Andrew Johnson. He does a wonderful job.
Oh, good.
Andrew Johnson was...
I don't know what he looked like.
Well, he was... rather a plain individual, had kind of rather longish hair.
Topic is too big.
He was an alcoholic.
Oh.
was oftentimes drunk in the White House.
Oh, my goodness. Were there a lot of drunk presidents? I'd be drunk if I were in there.
I don't know. As I said, there, we have history on Andrew Johnson. But,
yeah.
He was an interesting vice president because, okay. well, for one thing, he was from the South, uh-huh. Which presented an interesting, whole interesting set of problems with Reconstruction because, you know, Lincoln had plans for Reconstruction for his second term because the war had ended and
yeah.
obviously he was assassinated shortly after the surrender at Appomattox. So he didn't get to carry on his Reconstruction
right.
plans, and a lot of the people in Lincoln's administration and people that supported Lincoln were concerned because of Johnson's background and being a Southern sympathizer and from the South and a Southern senator before the election,
yeah.
That the Reconstruction might not be quite as friendly and robust as what Lincoln.
yeah.
And they were right.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So Reconstruction was completely different than what Lincoln's original plans were. But Grant did serve as president later on. After Lincoln,
I've done that twice.
Yeah,
I said the wrong wrong follow up. That was stupid.
Now you had asked me during the break or maybe before we went to break if we had a Grant in our stable of presidents, and we do.
Uh huh.
We have an excellent Grant. Doug Ebert does Hiram Ulysses Grant, and that is his correct name, Hiram Ulysses Grant. Good story about that, and I'll tell that.
Yeah, I'd like to hear that.
But anyway, Doug Ebert does Grant, does a wonderful job. He has a resemblance to Grant. He got the whole
uh-huh.
persona, the beard, and the whole nine yards. And
was he a short man?
Grant was not very tall.
Yeah.
Right. He was compared to Lincoln, he was
yeah.
really short.
Lincoln was what, 6'4", 6'6"?
Yeah, he was well
somewhere
over 6 feet.
Range.
Yeah, but Doug does a great job. Doug is a semi-retired attorney. He was an assistant county prosecutor for a number of years. Had a private practice, and now he's kind of call him semi-retired. He actually runs the law library for Marion County.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. But, I know where that is.
I'll contact Doug, and maybe Doug could come up and do a couple hours
I'd
with
love
you
to
because
have it.
Yeah. He will come in and do as Grant,
uh-huh.
As the character Grant. And he knows Grant up and down.
Oh,
but
my.
The interesting story about that name, when Grant was born, his given name was Hiram Ulysses Grant. At some point in his early adulthood, his father decided that he was going to go to West Point. Grant didn't necessarily want to go to West Point.
He but doesn't sound like the kind of guy that would.
His father decided that he wasn't going to be a merchant. He had no ability there. So he decided he needed to go to West Point. So the congressman from their area was the one that at that time, and still, you have to get an appointment from your
yep.
congressman to go to West Point. So his father contacted the congressman in the area, and he gave him the appointment. He didn't really know what his name was. So when the congressman submitted his name to West Point, he knew that his first name was Ulysses, and obviously his last name was Grant, but he didn't know if he had a middle name. But he knew his mother's maiden name was Simpson, so he called him Ulysses Simpson Grant.
Okay.
So when Grant gets to West Point, he walks up to the registrar to sign in, and the perturbed sergeant sitting there taking names is, "What's your name?" Ulysses or Hiram Ulysses Grant. So he runs his finger down the list. He says, "I have no Hiram Ulysses Grant. I have a Ulysses Simpson Grant. If that's you, sign here. If not, step aside. I'm a busy man." Well, he didn't want to lose his appointment,
yeah,
so he signed. Ulysses Simpson Grant. So that's how that part came about.
I'll be there.
When his fellow students found out that his initials were U.S. Grant, they started calling U.S. or Sam Grant.
Oh.
So oftentimes you'll see Ulysses Grant referred to as Sam Grant.
Now, if I recall correctly, he didn't graduate very high in
class. Was at the bottom of the
Absolutely, at the bottom.
He was at the bottom. I think he was one or two from the bottom.
Yeah.
But as we can see by reading history of the Civil War, he turned out to be a way above normal general and thinker when it came to strategy in the war.
Was he as big an alcoholic as I was told when I was young?
Well, I think that's, again, that's been overblown.
Yeah, yeah. The myth is bigger than the person.
He was before he, his first tour of duty, he did drink too much and was actually quit the service because of his drinking issues.
Oh.
Got straightened around. Then when he went back in the Army, when the war broke out, well, actually, he was in the Mexican War. That's where he spent most of his early years. But then when the Civil War broke out and he went back into the war again, then he pretty much straightened himself out. Now, that's not to say he didn't have a drink occasionally.
Yeah, you got to self-medicate.
But he was an alcoholic early in life,
to
speak. What he did do a lot was smoke a tremendous amount of cigars.
Yeah.
And that all got started. This was kind of funny because the way it got started, he smoked an occasional cigar. And during one particular battle, he had this cigar in his mouth during the battle. It was pouring down rain, and he still kept chomping on the cigar. And some reporter saw it and said that, you know, something in his article about to the effect that, you know, poor old Grant had to keep a wet, rain-soaked cigar in his mouth through this battle because he didn't have any more. As a regard, people started sending him cigars.
Oh, my. So
sending
he got tons.
Sending tons of them. He was up to 16 cigars a day.
Oh, my.
By the end of the war.
There was a period. I smoked cigarettes for 12, 13 years. When I first started, I didn't even smoke that many cigarettes, let alone cigars.
He was smoking 16 cigars a day. And, of course, if you have ever read his memoirs or know anything about his death, he died of throat cancer.
I did not know that.
Yeah, okay. He died of throat cancer.
Well, we learn something all the time from you.
And struggled to write his memoirs. He was dying when he started to write his memoirs and literally finished the last chapter of his memoirs to die before he died. The day before he died.
Oh, my goodness.
And if it had not been for a man by the name of Samuel Clemens, the memoirs would have never been written and never been published.
Samuel Clemens
did that? Mark Twain was the one that talked him into writing his memoirs and getting them published.
Huh. That's interesting. So well, I've finished mine, so when I'm when I'm gone, ask my wife for them, and you can put them in the Marion Historical Society.
So, again, I'll try to make a contact with Doug and see if he'd be interested in doing one of your shows.
I'd love to have that. Or any of your presidential candidate
people. Well, I know that Warren Harding came in and talked with Charlie one time, so I'm sure Warren would be more than happy to come in and spend some time with you, and I know several of the others would probably be willing to do that too. I could probably get James Polk or William McKinley in there since I do both of them.
Yeah, you might be able to. Well, you know, one of the things I've done in the past, I'd say 3 months, I made a decision that my show had to have some social value.
Sure.
And so I've been reading about once a week. I've been reading a speech. I read Dr. Seuss's The Lorax, which isn't really a speech, but it's kind of a speech on environmental stuff.
Sure.
But I've been reading a speech once a week from everything from the Gettysburg Address to I read Frederick Douglass's speech in about slavery.
Yes.
There's
a new biography out about Frederick Douglass, by the way. I just purchased it.
Oh.
It's about 800 pages, but it's a very inclusive biography. I haven't started on it yet.
His speech was very, very long.
Oh, yes, right.
It took me 2 days to read it.
I think I just kind of took a cursory look at the book, and I think those are in there as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
it's brand new biography.
It's great, and I hope that people that listen to my show, I know there are a lot of people that absolutely disagree with my progressive direction, but I hope that they'll at least listen to the show because they'll learn something about history.
And I think that's the part that I enjoyed about listening to Charlie and about having interaction with Charlie when
he
I come in and did shows with him, is we always try to teach something.
Yeah.
And that's something that the Marion County Historical Society takes great pride in. By doing living history, by doing reenactors and having living history, I think you can get more history taught that way than by telling somebody, here, read this book. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people these days don't have time mm-hmm. to read a book, but they've got time to maybe listen or go to a program where mm-hmm. someone recreates history for them.
I've got an interesting idea. My youngest, my eldest son, is a recreator of the Civil War, armies. Mm-hmm. He has both the Confederate Army uniform and the Union Army mm-hmm. uniform, and he is... He's smart as a whip and knows history. We ought to try to get him to come and help you out in some of these presentations.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Well, yeah. You know, we have the Marion County Historical Society has a reenacting group, the 121st Ohio Volunteer.
Oh, do they? I didn't know that.
Yeah. The 121st was commissioned in Marion.
Oh.
So we do have a group of Civil War reenactors.
Yeah. Christopher is his name. We call him KJ. KJ has gotten out of it probably in the last, he went to work at... what's the name of the university where he's working down in Columbus? Anyway, he went to work at a university, and he just has run out of time to do it.
Sure.
But I think he'd be interested. I'm going to call him and ask him would. Yeah.
Well,
it would be kind of fun to have him standing in uniform when you're having your president's.
Absolutely. Thing. Well, we used to do that. And we have hopes to be able to do that again. We've lost some members out of the 121st, and they're always looking for new members to participate in that. So, yeah, sure, absolutely.
It's kind of weird.
And you don't have to have a, you know, in his case he does, but, you know, I always tell people you don't have to have a uniform to join the 121st because we have a lot of those. We have a lot of uniforms available. We have a lot of reenactors' clothes. In fact, I've told you, when you're ready to do Buchanan, we can outfit you.
Yeah,
you don't
that'd
have
be
to
great.
Worry about the clothing. We've got the clothing.
Oh, you
we're
don't
down
have
to 1 minute.
You don't. Yeah, we're down to one. Well, you don't have it big enough for me.
Oh, yes, we do.
Okay.
Oh, yes, we do. That's never an excuse.
Well, we're going
to have a seamstress on staff.
Oh, do you? We're going to be taking a break here in about 45 seconds. Let's try to wrap this up just for the 2 minute break. Where are we? Where are you going? You have decided to do away with the presidential dinner.
Yeah, we've already canceled it for the year, and we're thinking about possibly doing a spring version of it. We always do them in November, but we're thinking about maybe doing a spring version of it if things are cleared up, maybe in May.
I'll have to start woodshedding if I'm going to do Buchanan then, right?
We'll have to see how the COVID thing goes first, though.
Yeah,
a lot of it depends on that.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break here. We'll be back in about 2 minutes.
Charlie, do you know because of you, more Marion residents know that flipping the bird was invented in 320 BC than in any other county in America?
Yes, but I didn't tell you the rest of the story.
What's that?
At 320 BC, in 1 minute, the fat lip was invented.
WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
Opiates has taken everything and everyone I've ever loved away from me. Everything.
I blew my ankle out and I got prescribed pain pills by my doctor.
If making my detox public is going to help somebody, I'm all for it. I just wish I would have had a warning.
Opioid dependence can happen after just 5 days. Know the truth, spread the truth. A message from Truth, the Ad Council, and ONDCP.
All right, we're back, and I'm getting some education here about Ohio from Fred Malone with the Historical Society. Fred, you said you've got a new purchase?
Yeah, I want to kind of wrap up with Marion County Historical Society.
Okay.
Again, just for people's information, if you don't already know, we have canceled the Dinner with the Presidents this year, which was to be the first Saturday in November. Because of the COVID issue. Now, the museum is open. We're open Wednesday through Sunday, and we do respect all the COVID regulations.
Yep.
When you come in, you'll be asked to wear a mask. We do have hand sanitizer stations throughout the museum, and we will have a guide there if you so desire, who will also be masked to help you through the museum. But I encourage people to go through on their own because there's a lot of material they can read and take their time. But the guide or the docent, as we call them, would be there to answer any questions you might
have. Give us the times again just so.
Wednesday, through Sunday, 1 to 4.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good.
So you can come in anytime. There is a small fee, and I forgive me, I don't remember off the top of my head what it is. There is a little
discount. Is it over $100?
No, heavens no. I think we're talking maybe $4 or $5.
Okay.
There is a slight discount if you're a senior citizen and if you're a child, you know.
Yeah.
But it's very nominal, $4 or $5 at the most.
All right.
All right. Just last Wednesday, I attended the Doug Denzer sale. Doug Denzer was prominent. Denzer, of course, is a prominent family in Marion County, Denzer Funeral Home and so forth.
Okay.
And I think this might have been a cousin. I'm not sure. But Doug's has just passed away here back, I think, in June. And his wife is living out in Arizona, I think, with one of their daughters. And their son, whose name also is Doug, decided that it was time to have a sale and clear out some things. There were two houses on the property. They sold one. I think the other house maybe will be up for sale sometime in the future. But they had a huge auction last Wednesday. And there was a lot of Marion County memorabilia being offered there.
Cool.
As well as a number of other, you know, items that, from the family and so forth. It was a big sale. Started at 10 in the morning, and I think I left at 5:30, quarter till 6, and they were still going. So it was, you know, a big sale.
Must have taken a nap after that.
Boy, I was wiped out. Because what I went for didn't sell until like 5 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
So I was there all day. But what I went for, and this had been advertised in the sale, back in about 1890, 1885, somewhere in that neighborhood, Dr. Osborne started a medical practice in Waldo.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's familiar with the GNR is, the bologna restaurant.
Yep.
Right behind the GNR is a house. And behind that house on the corner of the alley is a little building. And that little building was where Dr. Osborne practiced medicine for 50 years.
And it's still standing?
The building's still there.
Oh.
Right. Love to have the building someday.
Yeah.
But anyway, the building was still there.
Is it a wood building?
Yes, it's a wooden frame building. Yep. Could be moved. Yeah. It could be moved. But in the sale was the sign that hung above his office for 50 years. We're not sure, but we think early on in his practice, it could have been lit by gas.
Mm-hmm.
But at some time, and I think about 1890, Waldo got electricity. So at sometime it was converted to electric on the inside. Now, it had glass on both sides. It hung out above his office over the front door, and it said Dr. Osborne on either side, and the sign was lit up so that at night it would light up.
That's pretty modern for the
1890. So the sign was advertised for sale in the auction. Well, the historian that I am and the fact that I want to keep things of Marion in Marion, I thought we got to have this.
Yeah.
So I talked to our director. She gave me a budget because occasionally we have bought items from sales that we thought needed to stay in the archives of the Marion County Historical Society. So she gave me a budget. I went to the sale to buy this. Now, when I got there and looked it over, obviously because it was over 100 years old. It wasn't perfect, which I knew it wouldn't be.
Yeah.
But everything was original. The original mounting for it was done by a blacksmith. Everything was there. The box was there. The one glass was still intact, but the other glass was missing. Didn't really matter to
me. Easy
enough
to replace.
We had the one glass, right. And when we buy things like that, we restore them, but we don't restore them to pristine condition.
Yes.
We clean them up. We replace any missing part, and we hang them or use them, utilize them. So I was set to buy it. Well, the bidding started. And I had my Marion County Historical Society shirt on and kind of passed the word around so that everybody really knew what I was there for and why I was there and what I was bidding. I only bid on one thing all day, and that was it. There was one person that bid against me. Now, I don't recognize the person. No one seemed to know the person, so I don't think he was from the area. And I think he probably thought he could take it somewhere else and make money off of it because, of, you know, that type of thing is popular now. People are looking for those.
He wasn't
primitive type things.
He wasn't from the TV show American Pickers, was he?
No, wasn't one of those guys. Okay. Wasn't one of those guys. But the bidding started and progressed beyond my budget rather quickly. And it was kind of odd because I didn't stop at my budget. I thought, well, I'll make up the difference. So I went up to $275 thinking I would make up the difference. My budget was
the Malones will not be eating out for
not
the next
tonight. My budget was a couple hundred dollars, and I kept hearing somebody behind me say, "Keep going, keep going, keep going," and I didn't realize they were really telling me to keep going.
Oh.
That they were going to step in.
Okay.
Until I hit that 275 mark, and the other guy bid 300, and I thought, I got to quit. And the guy said, "Keep going." So I finally realized he's telling me to keep going. So
he's
going to
help
going.
You.
Got it for $375, which was $175 more than what we had planned to pay for it.
Yeah.
But we got the sign. And I was so thrilled. I'm telling you, my heart was beating so fast because I wanted that sign so badly.
That's
for
what
the
auctions
museum.
Do.
It does. And when I turned around, it was Dave Roush from Dave Roush Heating and Cooling.
Yeah, I know.
And Dave, such a great supporter of the community anyway. Dave said, I kept trying to get your attention to let you know I was going to take care of this. And I said, well, it finally dawned on me, but I didn't know who it was until I turned around. Dave gave me a check for $175 to make up the difference. Yeah, and
thanks,
I could not be any more appreciative of that fact, and so happy and so thrilled that we got this sign.
Where are you going to put it?
Well, it's being restored, and again, as I said, it's being brought back up. We're going to replace the glass on the other side. With the this was a reverse painted glass.
Uh-huh.
So the paint that's inside of the original was in pretty good shape, the piece that didn't get broken. So the big mystery is, did it get broken when it was taken down? Did it get broken while it was being stored in the Denzer's barn? Or did it get broken the day of the sale when they moved it out? Who knows?
Yeah.
But there was no glass in it at all. But we can easily replace that, recreate that other sign. So we're going to hang it if you're familiar with the museum at all, when you go down to our lower level, when you get to the bottom of the stairs going into the lower level, that's our medical area.
Okay.
So we have a lot of
natural
things. Yeah, yeah, great place where we have a lot of things from like the Sawyer Sanatorium and from some doctors that practice in the area. So we're going to be able to suspend it from the wall there so that when you hit the bottom of the stairs, you'll look up and see Dr. Osborne's sign lit up.
That'll be
right
neat.
There, yeah.
Yeah.
And the sign, the side that is the original side will be faced out.
Oh,
so you'll see the original side. The other side will be facing in toward the other wall, so you won't really see that side. You'll see that it's there, but you won't see the recreated side. You'll see the original side there. So
sounds
I'm
like
so
fun.
Thrilled to have saved that sign. So I'll just put this out to anybody out there. If you're thinking about having a family sale and you think there's anything in there that should stay in and be a part of Marion's history and be a part of the archives in Marion's history and could be displayed periodically or permanently, depending on what it is, before you put it in the sale, think about donating it to the Marion County Historical Society. And a lot of people over the years have done that, Glenn, because we have over 40,000 items in our archives.
Oh, what's the most unusual item, would you say?
Oh, wow. Probably Prince Imperial.
Prince Imperial.
Prince Imperial. Yeah, Prince Imperial is a stuffed Percheron horse.
Oh, okay.
That was donated to us a number of years ago.
Huh.
So, yeah, that's probably the most unusual item in there, I would say. Not too many museums have stuffed horses in it.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so.
And the thing that makes this so unusual is, well, first of all, Prince Imperial was noted for his long mane. At one time, his mane was the longest mane of any Percheron horse in the United States.
Oh, my.
He was acquired from France from Napoleon's family.
Okay.
They were the family that raised him. And he was taxidermied by the same taxidermist that taxidermied the elephant that belonged to the big circus man in New York. Who am I thinking of?
Ringling?
No, Ringling. Anyway. This
Barnum
is what happened.
And Bailey?
No, not Barnum and Bailey. But anyway.
I'm done with
P.T. Barnum.
P.T.
Barnum.
Yeah, Barnum and Bailey.
Same taxidermist, So anyway, we have gotten a lot of things from people over the years. But if you're going to have one of those sales, look things over and think about if it needs to really go to the museum or if it needs to go to the sales.
And
donate it to us. But anyway, we saved the Dr. Osborne sign. And that will be on view probably, I would say, sometime. Well, the museum will close in December, so I'm hoping that we get it done and get it hung before the end of this year.
That'd be fun to go see.
So,
All right. We've got about 3 minutes. Do you have anything you want to touch on in 3 minutes?
One other thing before the next break, as far as Marion County Historical Society, we are once again doing our one-of-a-kind raffle of a Henry rifle. This is, I think, our fifth year in a row for doing this. It has a custom laser engraved stock that features Marion County's 2020 Bicentennial Celebration logo.
There were Henry rifles in the Civil War, weren't there?
There were.
Yeah.
Henry's been around a long time. So this year we're raffling off a model H006M, which is a 357 Magnum, which can be used for deer hunting in Ohio. It has a straight grip. It's American walnut stock. It's got a brass receiver. It's a 10-round capacity, and, of course, it's made in the USA.
Do you have any a value that has been it's been appraised at?
Well, to purchase this rifle without the engraved stock, you're going to pay at least $850 for it, just the rifle itself. The drawing will be held at Norton Sporting Goods on November the 9th. You need not be present to win.
Is Norton down in Waldo?
That's just outside of Waldo, right? Tickets are $10 a piece. Only 400 will be sold, so it's a limited 400 tickets. We hope to make, after expenses, in the past we've made around $3,000 off of it. By the time we get the rifle at wholesale.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we have to pay for the engraving on it. And by the time we get all of our expenses paid and the tickets printed and all that, we usually make around $3,000 if we sell all the tickets, and we usually do sell out. So get your tickets quick. You can buy them at the museum during the open hours. You can get them from any board member. You can call me. I have tickets available all the time. I'm in the phone book. Again, it's a one-of-a-kind Henry 357 Magnum. And if you don't want the rifle, you can take $500 in cash.
Oh, that's...
And then we'll auction it off again.
Yeah, I mean, the cash is good, but boy, you would be making money on that.
Well, last year, for instance, a person that won the rifle didn't want it, but they took the $500 in cash, and we did a silent auction on the rifle and made some extra money.
Excellent, excellent. So. Yeah, that'll be starting when? Is it going
on sale
right
now?
Okay.
Yep, they're sale right now, and like I said...
When's the last day to get it?
You can get them clear up until November the 8th.
November the 8th. Okay.
Yeah, that would have been the actual...
Right after election.
That would have been the Saturday before... The Saturday we had the presidential dinner. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we're going to take a break here. You're listening to Glenn Coble. We're on the air, and Fred Malone, and we'll be back after about 2 minutes, all right?
Hey, Scott, I bet you cannot guess what my favorite type of animal is.
Cats?
No, dogs. Now, can you guess what my favorite type of dog is?
Black Lab.
No, Golden Retriever. Was there any doubt?
WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM, The Talking Place.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back. Fred and I were having a good chat.
Discussion.
I'm sorry about that. We're back here, and you're listening to On the Air with Glenn Coble, and my guest today is Fred Malone from the Marion Historical Society. We're learning a lot of stuff. I'm now learning about the horse that they have down there. I didn't know that they had one of the Napoleon's relative horses. Anyway, we'll get into that some other time.
Yeah, we can spend yeah, a good half hour
could.
Talking about that.
Go ahead.
Well,
I'm
wanted
sorry.
To switch over a little bit about sure. Malabar, because I know a lot of people listen to find out things that are going on at Malabar when I was on with Charlie, and now when I'm on with you, I'll continue to do the same thing, because I know people. We've had a lot of people from the Marion area come to events at Malabar because of the radio station and because of my ability to be on here and talk about it. But currently, of course, just like every place else. everything is shut down at Mount Mari. All the activities, the events and that type of thing are shut down. However, the trails are still open at Malabar. We have equestrian trails as well as footpaths that, that people can hike, and we do still get a lot of
people going
hiking. And it's a great place to walk. We have almost 1,000 acres in the park. So you can walk, you know, the Sugarbush Trail. You can walk the Jungle Brook Trail. You can even walk the equestrian trails if you want. There's
watch
a lot
where
of
you
woods
step.
There. I'm sorry?
Watch where you step.
Watch where you step if you're on the equestrian trails.
But
you can walk in the Dorse Duke Woods. You can walk up in the Sugarbush, as I said. You can walk up Ferguson's Meadow. There's a lot of nice hiking that can be taken over there.
Is that its? Is that the Malabar? Is that their purpose for being, trails and hiking?
Well, yes and no. It's one of a kind park. It is part of the state park system. Originally belonged to Louis Brumfield, who was a world-renowned author in the 30s and 40s and early 50s. He was a Mansfield-born individual who went off to World War One. Lived in France for a number of years. I'm giving you the short version here because a lot of people already know. Came back his home county, Richland County, just as World War II was breaking out. Bought three farms totaling about 600 acres. Put together a huge farm and became a conservationist and a ecologically correct, almost what you would call an organic farmer. Way before his time.
Yeah.
In fact, a lot of farming activities because of Louis Brumfield changed the way they did things because of his prominence. He became famous because he wrote 31 books in 30 years, 31 novels in 30 years. He also wrote books about farming. He was the most prolific and the most the highest paid author in the world in the 1930s, surpassing people like F. Scott Fitzgerald and Ernest Hemingway, who were friends of his. But he came, built these, put these three farms together, built a huge estate. We have a 35-room house over there. So people come to visit the house. They come to the farm. They come to see the farming. They come to walk the trails.
Okay.
But again, everything right now is shut down.
Yep.
Once a year, the last weekend of September, we have the Ohio Heritage Days there, which is a two-day event, Saturday and Sunday, sponsored by the Ohio Department of Natural Resources.
What month is that?
This month.
This month, okay.
But of course, it's suspended.
Yeah,
it's
unfortunately
not going to be held this year.
Yeah.
Currently, everything is suspended through October 31st. However, I don't really think anything else will take place the balance of the year. We're hoping to be able to open again and maybe in the spring. I'll keep you posted as I'm coming in. But right now, at least through the 31st of October. The only other two things that would have been held throughout the balance of the year was Hearthside Cooking in November. And that would have been taking place up in the Pew Cabin in the Sugar Bush. And that's where we'd do a complete Thanksgiving dinner on an open hearth.
Wow.
And people can participate and then eat the meal. That was still on the schedule in November, but I'm thinking that'll get canceled.
Probably.
The only other thing was in December, and that was the Christmas open house, and that'll probably get canceled too.
Yeah, that's a show.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
okay,
I did want to mention.
Yep.
There is a new book that just came out about Louis Brumfield, just released 2 months ago. And the title of the book is The Planter of Modern Life. The Planter of Modern Life, written by a gentleman by the name of Stephen Heyman, H-E-Y-M-A-N, Stephen Heyman. You can get the book on Amazon, I'm sure, or probably Google Books. And it may soon be in Barnes & Noble. I have not yet read the book myself. However, one of my other fellow board members who has the book, who helped the author, quite a bit with research, has a copy that the author gave him, so I intend to read it sometime in the next few months. But he says it's an excellent read. Talks a lot about Louis' political views. He had a lot of influence with politicians, including presidents.
It sounds like
and governors.
It sounds like he'd be a great guest on my show. A progressive.
Too
life.
Bad he's not. Too bad he's not alive. Yeah. But again, the book is. From the two or three people that have already read it, and we have a couple board members that have read it, say it's a very good read. But again, it's called The Planter of Modern Life by Stephen Hayman.
Now, a lot of you've talked about a lot of books about local stuff.
Yes.
Are a lot of these books available in our library?
Books by local artists or local
writers.
Authors.
Yeah.
Yes, we do have some copies in the local library. If not, we have copies in the museum that can be purchased in our gift shop.
Are you going to do that with this new book you're talking about?
I'm not sure whether we'll have any copies here locally, but it will be available eventually in the visitor center at Malabar.
Okay.
But again, you can pick it up, I'm sure, right now on Amazon.
Sure. Give the name again.
The name again, The Planter of Modern Life by Stephen Hayman.
Cool.
Planter of Modern Life by Stephen Hayman. And again, it's a new take on Bromfield. Mr. Hayman did about 3 years worth of research, and he spent a lot of time at the farm going through the archives that we have there, what's available. I know there's some unpublished photographs that's going to appear in the book. A lot of information that'll be in the book has never been read or heard before.
Wow.
So anybody that has any interest in Malabar or Louis Bromfield and his take on life, I think you'll really appreciate the read just from what I've been told.
Where does the name Malabar come from?
Malabar was a coast in India.
Ah, yes.
Yes, Malabar coast of India. Mr. Bromfield and his family spent a good deal of time on that coast. Uh-huh. When he purchased the three farms in Richland County on Pleasant Valley Road, he looked around at the scenery and he thought, this looks just like the Malabar coast in India. So I'm going to name my home Malabar.
Cool.
So if you've never been to the farm before, if you've never been to the big house, when you walk up to the big house, above the front door, you'll see a touch of India there in the ornamentation that's there.
Cool.
And you'll see throughout the design of the house, you'll see some tastes of India here and there.
So did he spend some time there? I mean, a lot of time?
Yes. Yeah. Well, they lived in France from 21 to 39, 38. So two of his daughters were actually born in France.
Okay. And if I recall correctly, Britain was the the colonial. They were the ones that I was going to say
colonized India.
Owned
correct.
India.
Absolutely. Yeah, so there was a lot of British influence there.
Okay, all right. So, but France was not the
no
overlord.
No, he was in France during World War One. He was an ambulance driver for the U.S. Ambulance Service in World War One, and he liked the surroundings and the terrain so well that after the war, he came back to the States for a while, but returned to France with his new bride, and they rented a pretty palatial house just outside the suburbs of Paris called Senlis, France. And that's where they spent the next 17 years. As I said, two of his daughters were born there, and he wrote a lot of books while living in France. And he probably would have not left France and come back to the States had it not been for the outbreak of World War II.
Yeah.
He had been in Germany again during World War One, or been in Europe during World War One, and saw what the Germans were capable of then. Mm-hmm. He'd heard a lot about this Hitler fella, and he was a little bit afraid of what was coming.
Rightfully so.
Plus, the powers that be in France, the government, French government, actually came to him and said, "Hey, because of your political background and your outspokenness, we think maybe you better get out of the country because it might be detrimental to France." Well, it didn't matter anyway because, you know, Hitler took over France anyhow. But they were afraid not only for themselves, but they were afraid for Louis and his family.
Well, I have
by that time, he had two young children.
I have a relationship with him then. When I was touring Europe with the folk trio I was in, we were the Bay of Tonkin happened.
Oh.
And France said, "You're not allowed to play in France."
Get out.
And what we did is we played on the streets, and we got more money that way.
Sure, than you would have in a concert, right.
So I have something in common with
him. So anyway, that's what prompted him to come back to the States and buy this farm, or these three farms. And his goal was to encourage other farmers to take under some of the practices that he was doing, the soil conservation, the contour farming, prevent the runoff of the topsoil and all that type of thing.
Wow,
but he also operated a dairy there. Yeah, he operated a dairy there, too,
oh.
when he was there.
Oh.
Unfortunately, we don't have a dairy there now, but he had quite a large dairy at the time. But what really gave him that bully pulpit, so to speak, was the popularity of his novels.
Yeah.
Because of the novels that he wrote, and there's many that were being sold, his name was out there. So when he started preaching agriculture, then he had that bully pulpit,
yeah,
so to speak.
Yeah, he already had it.
And people started listening to him. Yeah. So a lot of things were happening because of that. And he was popular clear out the 30s, 20s, 30s, and 40s. His style of writing started to fall off in the early 50s. So he wasn't making as much money then as he did early on, but he was making $800,000, $1 million a year in the 20s.
Back when money was really money.
Yeah.
Well, we've got about 2 minutes and a half to go. Is there anything else you need to get?
Well, yeah, one other thing. There will be another book coming out on Brumfield. Doesn't have a title yet. It's being written by a young author, a female author, who I think is like in her late 20s. And it is, from what I understand, is going to be a totally different aspect of Brumfield than what the Planner of Modern Life is. So I think it's going to dwell more on the agricultural side of him. So I'll keep you posted the more I know about that.
Sounds like we could have learned a lot from him way early.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I will say this, if you're interested in reading any of Louis Brumfield's books, if you go on eBay and just type in Louis Brumfield, a lot of stuff pops up, and you can buy original copies of his books that were printed in the 20s, 30s, and 40s. I've amassed a pretty good collection of the 31 books.
I'll be
I think I'm only lacking two of having all the books.
Better
that
get
he
back
wrote.
Online.
But he was a Pulitzer Prize winner as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he wrote a book called Early Autumn back in the 20s. It was a Pulitzer Prize winner.
It sounds to me like it's a day trip for my wife and I in
absolutely.
The spring.
And everything in the house is all original to him.
Oh. Now, we haven't found Harding's dog's collar yet, though, have we?
No, unfortunately not.
Oh, my.
I have my theory on that. I think it's been melted down a long time ago.
Okay.
For the gold.
Well, we've got about 50 seconds left to go. Is there anything else you need to let
I'll
us know?
Yeah, I'll throw out there the Mohawk Historical Society. Again, I always like to plug that. You can belong to the Mohawk Historical Society for $10 a year, and you get six wonderful newsletters throughout the year that come with that, filled with excerpts from newspapers throughout the area from the early 1800s up until the 1950s and 60s. So it's really a great newsletter. Again, our museum is closed down through the balance of the year.
Yeah.
We normally would be open now. So it probably won't open now again until the spring.
Okay, well, this is Fred Malone. We've got Fred Malone as our guest. He'll be on next month, I assume, as well, if the creek don't rise. And I'm Glenn Coble. You've been listening to On the Air. Thanks a lot for listening. We'll be back.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1.